Holder intoned. "The Watcher on the walls," piped Toad. John cursed them all to their faces. They took no notice. Pip spurred his horse closer, reciting, "I am the fire that burns against the cold, the light that brings the dawn, the horn that wakes the sleepers, the shield that guards the realms of men." "Stay back," John warned him, brandishing his sword. I mean it, Pip." They weren't even wearing armor. He could cut them to pieces if he had to. Mathar had circled behind him. He joined the chorus. "I pledge my life and honor to the Night's Watch." John kicked his mare, spinning her in a circle. The boys were all around him now, closing from every side. "For this night," Holder trotted in from the left. "And all the nights to come." Finish, Pip. He reached over for John's reins. "So air your choices. Kill me, or come back with me." John lifted his sword and lowered it helpless. "Damn you," he said, "damn you all. Do we have to bind your hands, or will you give us your word you will ride back peaceful?" asked Holder. "I won't run, if that's what you mean." Ghost moved out from under the trees, and John glared at him. "Small help you were," he said. The deep red eyes looked at him knowingly. "We'd best hurry," Pip said. "If we're not back before first light, the old bear will have all our heads." On the ride back, John Snow remembered little. It seemed shorter than the journey south, perhaps because his mind was elsewhere. Pip set the pace, galloping, walking, trotting, and then breaking into another gallop. Mole's Town came and went, the red lantern over the brothel long extinguished. They made good time. Dawn was still an hour off when John glimpsed the towers of Castle Black ahead of them, dark against the pale immensity of the wall. It did not seem like home this time. They could take him back, John told himself, but they could not make him stay. The war would not end on the morrow or the day after, and his friends could not watch him day and night. He would bide his time, make them think he was content to remain here. And then, when they had grown lax, he would be off again. Next time, he would avoid the King's Road. He could follow the wall east, perhaps all the way to the sea. A longer route, but a safer one. Or even west, to the mountains, and then south over the high passes. That was the wildling's way, hard and perilous, but at least no one would follow him. He wouldn't stray within 100 leagues of Winterfell or the King's Road. Samuel Tarly awaited them in the old stables, slumped on the ground against a bale of hay, too anxious to sleep. He rose and brushed himself off.
I'm glad they found you, John.
I'm not, John said, dismounting. Pip hopped off his horse and looked at the lightening sky with disgust.
Give us a hand bedding down the horses, Sam, the small boy said. We have a long day before us, and no sleep to face it on, thanks to Lord Snow.
When day broke, John walked to the kitchens, as he did every dawn. Three-finger Hub said nothing as he gave him the old bear's breakfast. Today it was 3 brown eggs boiled hard, with fried bread and ham steak, and a bowl of wrinkled plums. John carried the food back to the King's Tower. He found Mormont at the window seat, writing. His raven was walking back and forth across his shoulders, muttering, "Corn! Corn! Corn!" The bird shrieked when John entered. "Put the food on the table," the old bear said, glancing up. "I'll have some beer." John opened a shuttered window, took the flagon of beer off the outside ledge, and filled a horn. Hub had given him a lemon, still cold from the wall. John crushed it in his fist. The juice trickled through his fingers. Mormont drank lemon in his beer every day and claimed that was why he still had his own teeth.
"Doubtless you loved your father," Mormont said, when John brought him his horn. "The things we love destroy us every time, lad. Remember when I told you that?"
"I remember," John said solemnly. He did not care to talk of his father's death, not even to Mormont.
"See that you never forget it. The hard truth or the ones to hold tight. Fetch me my plate. Ugh, is it ham again? So be it. You look weary. Was your moonlight ride so tiring?
John's throat was dry.
You know.
No,
the raven echoed from Mormont's shoulder.
No.
The old bear snorted.
Do you think they chose me Lord Commander of the Night's Watch because I'm dumb as a stump, Snow? Aemon told me you'd go. I told him you'd be back. I know my men, and my boys, too. Honor set you on the King's Road, and honor brought you back.
My friends brought me back, John said.
Did I say it was your honor?
Mormont inspected his plate. They killed my father. Did you expect me to do nothing?
If truth be told, we expect you to do just as you did.
Mormont tried a plum, spit out the pit.
I ordered a watch kept over you. You were seen leaving. If your brothers had not fetched you back, you would have been taken along the way, and not by friends. Unless you have a horse with wings, like a raven. Do you?
No. John felt like a fool.
Pity. We could use a horse like that.
John stood tall. He told himself that he would die well. That much he could do at the least. I know the penalty for desertion, my lord. I'm not afraid to die.
Die,
the raven cried.
Nor live, I hope, Mormont said, cutting his ham with a dagger and feeding a bite to the bird. You have not deserted, yet. Here you stand. If we beheaded every boy who rode to Mole's Town in the night, only ghosts would guard the wall. Yet maybe you mean to flee again on the morrow, or a fortnight from now. Is that it? Is that your hope, boy?
John kept silent.
I thought so.
Mormont peeled a shell off a boiled egg.
Your father is dead, lad. Do you think you can bring him back?
No, he answered, sullen.
Good, Mormont said. We've seen the dead come back, you and me. It's not something I care to see again.
He ate the egg in two bites and flicked a bit of shell out from between his teeth.
Your brother is in the field with all the powers of the North behind him. Any one of his lord's bannermen commands more swords than you'll find in all the Night's Watch. Now, why do you imagine they need your help, Are you such a mighty warrior? Or do you carry a grumpkin in your pocket to magic up your sword?
John had no answer for him. The raven was pecking at an egg, breaking the shell. Pushing his beak back through the hole, he pulled out morsels of white and yolk. The old bear sighed.
You are not the only one touched by this war. Like as not, my sister is marching in your brother's host, her and those daughters of hers, dressed in men's mail. Mage, there's a hoary old snark, stubborn, short-tempered, and willful. Truth be told, I can hardly stand to be around the wretched woman, but that does not mean my love for her is any less than the love you bear your half-sisters.
Frowning, Mormont took his last egg and squeezed it in his fist until the shell crunched.
Or perhaps it does. Be that as it may, I still grieve if she was slain. Yet you don't see me running off. I said the words, just as you did. My place is here. Where is yours, boy?
I have no place, John wanted to say. I'm a bastard. I have no rights, no name, no mother. And now not even a father. The words would not come. I don't know.
I do, said Lord Commander Mormont. The cold winds are rising, Snow. Beyond the wall, the shadows lengthen. Cutter Pike rights vast herds of elk, streaming south and east toward the sea, and mammoths as well. He says one of his men discovered huge, misshapen footprints not 3 leagues from East Watch. Rangers in the Shadow Tower have found whole villages abandoned. And at night, Sir Denis says, they see fires in the mountains, huge blazes that burn from dusk to dawn. Quarin Halfhand took a captive in the depths of the gorge, and the man swears that Mance Rayder is massing all his people in some new secret stronghold he's found. To what end, the gods only know. Do you think your Uncle Benjamin was the only ranger we've lost this past year?
Benjamin,
the raven squawked, bobbing his head, bits of egg dribbling from his beak.
Benjamin! Benjamin!
No, John said. There had been others. Too many.
Do you think your brother's war is more important than ours?
The old man barked. John chewed his lip. The raven flapped its wings at him.
War! 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 War!
It sang.
It's not, Mormont told him. God save us, boy. You're not blind. You're not stupid. When dead men come hunting in the night, do you think it matters who sits the Iron Throne?
No. John had not thought of it that way.
Your Lord Father sent you to us, John.
Why? Who can say?
Why? Why? Why?
The raven called.
All I know is that the blood of the first men flows in the veins of the Starks. The first men built the wall, and it said they remember things otherwise forgotten. And that beast of yours, he led us to the Whites, warned you of the dead man on the steps. Sir Jeremy would doubtless call that happenstance. Yet Sir Jeremy is dead, and I'm not.
Lord Mormon stabbed a chunk of ham with the point of his dagger.
I think you were meant to be here, and I want you and that wolf of yours with us when we go beyond the wall.
His words sent a chill of excitement down John's back. Beyond the wall?
You heard me. I mean to find Ben Stark, alive or dead.
He chewed and swallowed.
I will not sit here, meekly, and wait for the snows and the ice winds. We must know what is happening. This time, the Night's Watch will ride in force against the king beyond the wall, the others, or anything else that may be out there. I mean to command them myself.
He pointed his dagger at John's chest.
By custom, the Lord Commander Stuart is his squire as well. But I do not care to wake every morning wondering if you'd run off again. So I will have an answer from you, John Snow, and I will have it now. Are you a brother of the Night's Watch, or only a bastard boy who wants to play at war?
John Snow straightened himself and took a long, deep breath.
Forgive me, Father, Rob, Arya, Bran. Forgive me. I cannot help you. He has the truth of it. This is my place.
I am yours, my lord. Your man. I swear it. I will not run again. The old bear snorted.
Good. Now, go put on your sword.
Catelyn. It seemed 1,000 years ago that Catelyn Stark had carried her infant son out of Riverrun, crossing the Tumblestone in a small boat to begin the journey north to Winterfell. And it was across the Tumblestone that they came home now, though the boy wore plate and mail in place of swaddling clothes. Rob sat in the bow with Grey Wind, his hand resting on his direwolf's head as the rowers pulled at their oars. Theon Greyjoy was with him. Her uncle, Brynden, would come behind in the second boat, with a great John and Lord Carstark. Catelyn took a place toward the stern. They shot down the Tumblestone, letting the strong current push them past the looming wheel tower. The splash and rumble of the great water wheel within was a sound from her girlhood that brought a sad smile to Catelyn's face. From the sandstone walls of the castle, soldiers and servants shouted down her name, and Rob's, and Winterfell. From every rampart waved the banner of House Tully, a leaping trout silver against a rippling blue and red field. It was a stirring sight, yet it did not lift her heart. She wondered if, indeed, her heart would ever lift again. Oh, Ned! Below the wheel tower, they made a wide turn and knifed through the churning water. The men put their backs into it. The wide arch of the water gate came into view, and she heard the creak of heavy chains as the great iron portcullis was winched upward. It rose slowly as they approached, and Catelyn saw that the lower half of it was red with rust. The bottom foot dripped brown mud on them as they passed underneath, the barbed spikes mere inches above their heads. Catelyn gazed up at the bars and wondered how deep the rust went, and how well the portcullis would stand up to a ram, and whether it ought to be replaced. Thoughts like that were seldom far from her mind these days. They passed beneath the arch and under the walls, moving from sunlight to shadow and back into sunlight. Boats large and small were tied up all around them, secured to iron rings set in the stone. Her father's guards waited on the water stair with her brother. Sir Edmure Tully was a stocky young man with a shaggy head of auburn hair and a fiery beard. His breastplate was scratched and dented from battle, his blue and red cloak stained by blood and smoke. At his side stood the Lord Titus Blackwood, a hard pike of a man, with close-cropped salt-and-pepper whiskers and a hooked nose. His bright yellow armour was inlaid with jet in elaborate vine and leaf patterns, and a cloak, sewn from raven's feathers, draped his thin shoulders. It had been Lord Titus that led the sortie that plucked her brother from the Lannister camp. "Bring them in!" Sir Edmure commanded. Three men scrambled down the stairs, knee-deep in the water, and pulled the boat close with long hooks. When Grey Wind bounded out, one of them dropped his pole and lurched back, stumbling and sitting down abruptly in the water. The others laughed, and the man got a sheepish look on his face. Theon Greyjoy vaulted over the side of the boat and lifted Catelyn by the waist, setting her on a dry step above him as the water lapped around his boots. Edmure came down the steps to embrace her. "Sweet sister," he murmured hoarsely. He had deep blue eyes and a mouth made for smiles, but he was not smiling now. He looked worn and tired, battered by battle, and haggard from strain. His neck was bandaged where he had taken a wound. Catelyn hugged him fiercely. "Your grief is mine, Cat," he said when they broke apart. "When we heard about Lord Eddard, the Lannisters will pay. I swear it. You will have your vengeance." "Will that bring Ned back to me?" she said sharply. The wound was still too fresh for softer words. She could not think about Ned now. She would not. It would not do. She had to be strong. "All that will keep. I must see Father." "He awaits you in Isola," Edmure said.
"Lord Oscar is bedridden, my lady," her father Stuart explained.
When had this good man grown so old and grey?
"Instructed me to bring you to him at once."
"I'll take her." Edmure escorted her up the water stair and across the lower bailey, where Petar Baelish and Brandon Stark had once crossed swords for her favour. The massive sandstone walls of the keep loomed above them. As they pushed through a door, between two guardsmen in fish-crest helms, she asked, "How bad is he?" dreading the answer, even as she said the words. Edmure's look was somber.
"He will not be with us long, the maester say. The pain is constant and grievous."
A blind rage filled her. A rage at all the world, at her brother Edmure and her sister Lysa, at the Lannisters,
at the maesters, at Ned and her father and the monstrous gods who would take them both away from her? You should have told me, she said. You should have sent me word as soon as you knew.
He forbade it. He did not want his enemies to know that he was dying. With the realm so troubled, he feared that if the Lannisters suspected how frail he was,
they might attack.
Catelyn finished, hard.
It was your doing, yours, a voice whispered inside her. If you had not taken it upon yourself to seize the dwarf.
They climbed the spiral stair in silence. The keep was three-sided, like Riverrun itself, and Lord Huster's solar was triangular as well, with a stone balcony that jutted out to the east like the prow of some great sandstone ship. From there, the lord of the castle could look down on his walls and battlements, and beyond to where the waters met. They had moved her father's bed out onto the balcony.
He likes to sit in the sun and watch the rivers, Edmure explained. Father, see who I've brought. Cat has come to see you.
Huster Tully had always been a big man, tall and broad in his youth, portly as he grew older. Now he seemed shrunken, the muscle and meat melted off his bones. Even his face sagged. The last time Catelyn had seen him, his hair and beard had been brown, well streaked with grey. Now they had gone white as snow. His eyes opened to the sound of Edmure's voice.
Little cat,
he murmured, in a voice thin and wispy and racked by pain.
My little cat.
A tremulous smile touched his face as his hand groped for hers.
I watched for you.
I shall leave you to talk, her brother said, kissing their lord father gently on the brow before he withdrew.
Catelyn knelt and took her father's hand in hers. It was a big hand, but fleshless now, the bones moving loosely under the skin, all the strength gone from it.
You should have told me, she said. A rider, a raven.
Riders are taken, questioned, he answered. Ravens are brought down.
A spasm of pain took him, and his fingers clutched hers hard.
The crabs are in my belly, pinching, always pinching, day and night. They have fierce claws, the crabs. Maester Vaiman makes me dream wine, milk of the puppy. I sleep a lot, but I wanted to be awake to see you when you came. I was afraid. When the Lannisters took your brother, the camps all around us, I was afraid I would go before I could see you again. I was afraid.
I am here, father, she said, with Rob, my son. He'll want to see you too.
Your boy, he whispered. He had my eyes, I remember.
He did. And he does. And we brought you Jaime Lannister in irons. Riverrun is free again, father. Lord Huster smiled.
I saw. Last night, when it began, I told them. Had to see. They carried me to the gatehouse. Watched from the battlements. Ah, that was beautiful. The torches came in a wave. I could hear the cries floating across the river. Sweet cries, when that siege tower went up. Gods, would have died then, and glad. If only I could have seen you children first. Was it your boy who did it? Was it your Rob?
Yes, Catelyn said, fiercely proud. It was Rob, and Brynden. Your brother is here as well, my lord.
Him?
Her father's voice was a faint whisper.
The black fish came back from the vale. Yes. And Lysa.
A cold wind moves through his thin white hair.
God be good. Your sister, did she come as well?
He sounded so full of hope and yearning that it was hard to tell the truth.